Grant Denyer now.
It's Grant Denyer.
For the Gold Logie this year.
Oh, my God. It's Grant Denyer.
And our mom, Shezzy Denyer.
She's really crazy.
It's all true. It's all true. The podcast with Grant and Shezzy Denyer.
Welcome to Grant and Shezzy. It's all true. Grant and Shezzy Denyer. I'm Grant, obviously.
I'm Shezzy.
Because you have a girl voice. I have a boy voice. You should be able to tell the difference between the both of us.
This is our first podcast.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, we're married.
Yeah.
Have been for years. Ten years.
Ten lovely.
Failed at the first test.
Romantic years.
So we decided to do this podcast because, A, someone told us to, and we thought, when did we last have a serious adult conversation? Like actually just without the noise of kids, the interruption of them, life, bills. And the answer was never.
So serious.
Why not just do it here? So if we never really have the opportunity to talk frankly and openly and air our dirty laundry, we've decided to do that on this podcast.
Yeah. And can I just say I'm really quite scared that after today our children may be taken off us or something equally as bad.
Well, look, I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what we're going to do with it. I don't even know what we're going to talk about. But we've got lots of stories. We've got history. And I don't think we're too afraid to open up the book of our love.
That's what worries me because, disclaimer, I am 15 weeks pregnant, quite unwell, and almost have early onset Alzheimer's, would you say?
I think it's baby brain is what it's called.
Yes, that's what it feels like. I call myself a bit loose at the moment. That sounds wrong. Yeah.
That's what I called you when I met you. Ew! Ew!
And we have to introduce our production crew. We've got George. You can hear him laughing in the background.
Yes. G'day, guys. How
George
are you?
The Magnificent. Look at him on the cans and he's got the panel.
I don't know how on earth I got wrapped up in this. So thank you for trusting my... Well, whatever we're going to experience here.
You won't be. I don't know if you're going to say the same thing by the end because, boy, can I just say the thing I'm looking forward to most is freaking you out with some disgusting shit.
I expect nothing less, you two. Okay, I'm keen for it.
We were going to call this podcast something different, weren't we?
Well, we were trying to think of a name and I thought don't trust what comes out of this hole, but that kind of got... knocked on the head. Yeah, but I meant, you know, don't trust what comes out of my mouth at the moment.
Okay.
And I didn't think that wasn't my first take on what that title said.
No.
Don't trust what comes out of this hole. Could also be like a Bible for pregnancy. Who knows? Because our kids are pretty wild and you can't trust them and they came out of somewhere.
Not my hole.
George is already uncomfortable. Look at him. Where are you?
I'm doing the old radio.
He's turning green already 3 minutes in.
They came out the sunroof. Thank you.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, not my hole. It's intact.
Well, the other title we had was Pull My Finger and Other Tales of Love.
Yes.
From the Denyers.
Yes.
But we've settled with It's All True.
Yep.
And I think the reason why is because everything we share, we're hopefully just going to be as open and honest and as uncomfortable as we can be.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, we work in the media and sometimes we get written about and more often than not, none of that is true.
Correct.
So this could be a platform for us to be able to level with you and tell you what the hell is true and what isn't true.
And there's a question mark at the end, remember? So it's all true?
It's all true?
Yeah.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Because some of the things that have happened to us over the years are so out there, they don't seem true.
Yeah. So we'll share the honest ones, the real ones and the fake ones and discuss the in-between.
Yeah.
To give you, I think, of an essence, because this is the first podcast of who we are and what we're like as a couple, can I share with you, I know you didn't know the story because you were there, but how we first kind of became... when we clicked, because this is the problem with working together right now in this podcast is I think everyone needs to know this. We don't work well together.
No.
And we used to work together in a professional sense.
Sorry, we have worked together for 12 years.
Yeah, and it's shit every time we do.
We work together every day and we always argue about work, which is so strange because we're very different. Because you are very straight and you are very...
By straight, you mean...
Prepared.
Yeah, organized.
Organized.
And professional.
That's right.
And you?
And I am easygoing and a bit haphazard, but about the big picture.
Okay. So we clashed a lot. So when we were working together on Sunrise, a breakfast TV show, I was the weatherman, you were my producer, and we hated each other.
We did.
Quite frankly, just hated each other.
You were so annoying.
You were annoying. You were more annoying.
You were...
You kept trying to tell me how to do my job.
Yep, because you weren't doing it right. I have to say, at the time, you were really stretched thin. Yeah. So my role was to produce the Sunrise segment, okay? That was it.
Yeah.
You were doing racing on weekends.
Uh-huh.
You were doing Dancing with the Stars.
Yep.
You were doing – you had a lot of, you know, nights out after practicing with Dancing with the Stars where you'd have too many drinks.
Unwind after a big week of
that's right.
learning the tango.
And so there was a lot of mornings where I would get a call at 4 a.m. saying,
where's the location today? I can't find a crew.
And for a young producer who gave their all for this job, that was really annoying.
Oh, welcome to the game. You know, well, think about the opportunity you're given to work alongside a television great, an icon of the industry, and all you can complain about, well, he doesn't even know where the location is.
Oh, well,
I hadn't gone to bed that day, all right?
And I know.
I turned up.
And it was up to me to make you look half decent on air. That's why I would say to you, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to read.
You had very strong views on how you thought television should be done.
Absolutely.
And I had very – and I'm not saying I was right, but we had differing views. So we clashed a lot. So we didn't like each other. However, there's a happy ending to this story. Happy ending. We didn't like each other, but we were – George is looking at me like, come on, mate. Come on. Yeah. Lift your game. Had to go there.
That's cheap.
Things turned. We didn't like each other, but there was a moment. There was a spark. There was an explosion inside of me where I was like, whoa, and the game changed. My world stopped.
Yeah, there was.
And just love flooded in.
It was weird. We brushed hands and then it was almost out of a movie.
It was.
Something really corny.
It was weird. I turned around and my hand sort of just brushed past hers and I was like, wow. And the universe exploded. And I felt this tingle from head to toe just come over me. Just went.
And I've heard you talk about this before in interviews and I've always just let you go and not really commented because I just thought it made you sound absolutely crazy. But
it's true. I can back it up. And then this instant that this tingling happened from head to toe, I went, I cannot live without this woman. I need her in my life forever. And it hit me in a heartbeat. It was a punch from left field that I never expected. And I wasn't, oh, she's gone, guys. She's gone.
The hormones are raging, okay? Look. We don't need to keep going.
The hormones. It's a beautiful love story between two great human beings. It's the notebook of our time. But it was problematic because at that point, are you ready to declare this? You're not.
Oh, gosh. This is full on. Okay. Well, you've already started. So
you were married. I was in another relationship.
Yeah.
So that took a long time to navigate for us to then understand our emotions, how we felt about one another and what we wanted to do with those feelings.
Yes.
And to cut a long story short.
Please,
I talk for a living, guys. Here we are today.
That's right.
In love and on a podcast, declaring more than we should.
It was a rough journey at the start. It was. It wasn't like what you see in the movies.
No,
a dramatic start.
A breakfast television show where we all spoke about our relationships. Like our extended family were part of the storytelling on Sunrise. You know, Koshy spoke about his wife and everyone spoke about their children and I talk about my partner at the time. And Koshy would always be saying, hey, man, when are you going to marry her? Hey, hurry up and put a ring on it. And I'm like, shut up, man. Like, I have these feelings that I can't figure out. I didn't know what to do. I was torn. I felt obligated to carry on the story on Sunrise with my existing partner, not knowing what I was going to do and when I had all these feelings for you. Yeah,
that's right. It was strange. And I went all weird and basically ran away.
You ignored me.
Yeah.
I thought I broke
you. For weeks, yeah.
Because you just pretended like nothing had ever happened.
Because I freaked out. And as it turns out, I had a dissociative thing out of my body where I kind of just didn't deal with it.
It was so stressful for you that you disassociated from the experience.
And from life. Which,
so that wasn't confusing for me.
And at that time, I'm sure you thought I was a nutcase.
I sure did.
But it didn't stop you, did it?
No.
I still remember the sunrise Christmas party where they sat us next to each other because we worked together and it was real weird. And I kept talking to everybody else and then I'd move a spot and then you moved closer and then, you know, and we both kind of... We didn't know what to do.
We hid our love and then...
Well, I don't think we were scared of it because we didn't know what it was. It was a very, very powerful feeling. I've not experienced that before. And
it felt naughty. It felt wrong. It felt... But yet I was so right at the same time because, you know, things started happening where a colleague started to cotton onto it and then rumours started to spread and then we had paparazzi waiting outside your apartment. Yes. I was trying to sneak in and out just to...
I had to wear wigs.
You were wearing wigs.
Because I thought I'd, you know, throw them off the scent and wear a wig and totally play role some other character. And I got away with it for a while.
Yeah, but it was so uncomfortable.
It was terrible.
Not knowing when we're going to be caught and the embarrassment that would come as a result of that. I just felt like a naughty boy who was just in trouble all the time and nothing he could do was right.
And my job was being threatened.
Yes, it was.
Because that's right. Because Grant was the celebrity, so all these stories kept coming out, and so they kind of, you know, suggested to me that if the stories kept coming out, because they believed that I was leaking the stories,
I did.
Which, you know, I hadn't ever been in that situation before, so I was wearing wigs like 24/7.
They accused you of being the source of the leak, correct? Didn't they? Even though you had the most to lose out of it all.
That's right, because they never knew that though, because they thought that I was just trying to break up a relationship, and so I was about to be shipped off to Townsville or Cairns.
That's right. The network as a producer. Was so concerned that you were a home wrecker. That was going to bring down my career that they offered to move you to a completely different remote little TV station somewhere else just to remove the problem.
I know. And they're saying you two cannot speak. And so these really awful stories would come out painting me as this psychotic woman who's trying to break up a relationship. And then Grant would, you know, call me and say, are you okay? How are you dealing with this? And then, you know... It was messy. It was messy.
So
it was
messy.
Awful. And in the end, I left TV.
Yeah.
Remember?
You did.
I said, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
My parents were petrified. And so I moved back to the country, back to Bathurst, and sold cars.
You did. Yeah. Of which you were very successful at.
I was. Yep. So I've had a strange relationship.
And that's when I knew I really loved you. Because
I sold Holden's.
Yeah, in Bathurst, home of my favourite racetrack ever in the world. I thought, I can't let it go. She's the one. She's the one for me.
I thought it was when you found out I was Queen of the Mount.
Oh, that's right. Three-time Queen of the Mount. I thought, wow, I got to lock this thing down. This is amazing. Just put the sash on only, doll.
It was so funny because I'd talk to other people and I'd say, yeah, no, I was Queen of the Mount when I was younger. And they'd be like, cool. And then I told Grant, he's like, this is awesome. This is the best ever.
You stood on the podium with Brocky? What? This is amazing. It was a troublesome start that carried on for a long time, but it was all worth it in the end.
And then we had, I'm sorry.
Yep, Miko.
So we hadn't confirmed our relationship, okay?
Yep.
So Grant's family didn't know anything about me.
Yep.
At all. And we had been living together at this point for 3 months and I got a phone call one day that Grant had broken his back. Well, actually, it didn't happen like that. I was supposed to go to a monster truck event that Grant was going down to test out a new monster truck, and it was for a charity, and I encouraged him to go. But I felt really sick that day, like an anxiety sick in the stomach, and I thought, he's going to have to go himself. I just felt like something was going to happen, and so he went and... You know, he should have finished an hour after he arrived. So I kept calling his phone. No one answered, kept calling. He was supposed to go motorbike riding that afternoon, and the person that he was going motorbike riding with kept ringing me. And I started to have this really bad feeling. Anyway, I called one more time, and what's his name? He answered.
Jack Ellsgood.
Yes, that's right.
Former Roosters NRL player.
Yes. I just remember he answered the phone. He said, Grant's phone, Jack speaking. And I said, hi, it's Grant's friend, because nobody knew. It's Grant's friend, Cheryl, calling, just wondering how he's going. He said, look, I can't talk right now. He may never walk again. He's in the ambulance in front of me, and I've just started screaming hysterically. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I can't tell you anymore. I'm sorry. I'll tell you when we get to emergency, and hung up. And I just remember panicking. I didn't know, you know, who to call, and I called my mom and I called my dad, and they said, turn the radio on, and I turned the radio on, and that's where the first story hit 2UE. They said that Grant had, and I've got full tingles, and this wasn't in our list of things to talk about, but anyway, I'll just roll with it.
You do.
The story said Grant Denyer suspected spinal injury. You know, there is a chance that he won't ever walk again. And my phone went off its hook. Just everybody that we knew in news was calling. They had so much more detail than I did. At the time, I didn't have a car. I didn't have any money. Grant had everything in the car, so I started to try and I knew that he was down in Wollongong. I started to try and find, you know, coins around the house to put them together, because I thought I'm going to have to try and get myself down to Wollongong. And then I called his mum to tell his mum, and she was kind of like, who are you? I said, I'm just Grant's friend. And she said, I'm getting on the next plane to fly in. And that was very early in our relationship.
It was.
Yeah.
So you were sort of had to, you were outed before we were ready to.
When your mum turned up, because I waited for her to arrive, when she turned up at the house and she walked in and there's photos of us everywhere and you can tell that we'd been living together, she asked me how long we'd been living together, and she kind of said that, you know, she had told you specifically not to move in with me because she believed that I was a gold digger.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I didn't really process that at the time.
Yeah, she thought you had ulterior motives to.
Which is fair enough, because we were quite private. We didn't really tell anybody.
Yeah, no one understood and no one knew.
But to have to then go to the hospital, I got a lift, to have to walk in the back entrance at the hospital because all the media are out the front, and to be dealing with that, you know.
As the way to start a relationship formally.
It was full on.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember the moment it happened. So I was jumping seven cars, landed. The suspension broke, I think. My back then broke instantly. And the pain shot up so fast. I was like, I'm in a lot of trouble here. And it shot up so quick in just a matter of seconds. I thought, if I don't get out of this monster truck now, I won't be able to. So the moment it sort of rolled to a stop, I climbed out of it because they're very high, using the roll bars to get myself down. And my legs didn't work. And so I sort of collapsed down onto the ground.
And all the media are there filming it because it's a media day.
Yeah, so they had it on tape and I'm screaming in pain. And I thought, wow, this is bad. And Jack Ellsgood was there and he's holding my legs up to try and reduce the pain and I'm screaming. And then I remember the ambulance coming and the guys looked at me and thought, oh, geez, he's in a bad way here. And there was two in the ambulance. It was like the veteran paramedic and then a young bloke. And normally the veteran drives and the young bloke just sits in the back with the patients. And the veteran's like, ooh, I'm going to have to ride with him here and try and sort him out. You drive. And then the young bloke goes around to the glove box, gets out his pee plate, puts it on the back. And I thought, oh, great. This guy's just learned to drive and now he's going to take me to hospital. I've got a broken back. And on the way to the hospital, he got lost. He went the wrong way up a one-way street and he went over speed humps. Speed humps. with a freshly broken back. So I'm like, oh my God, could this get any worse? And then I was in such a bad way that none of the morphine was working, and I could tell the veteran guy was like, ooh, this is, he goes, mate, I've given you enough to put an elephant down here. So we finally get to the hospital and they stabilize the meds eventually and they find one that works, and, you know, it was okay. I remember getting there and the staff were fussing over me, and I just remember, all I can remember is one person just saying, it's okay, you're going to be okay. And that's all I heard. But as it turns out, I think that's all I needed to hear, because
yeah,
I just, from that point on, it sort of changed my mindset and my mentality. I was like, okay.
It was pretty scary at that point, because we didn't know. When I arrived at the hospital, they said there is a chance that he may never walk again. He's got limited feeling in his feet. And it's not good.
The vertebra had exploded apart. So it was in like 11 pieces, and there was a shard right up against the spinal cord, and no one knew. No one knew if I was going to be good or not.
And they didn't know what to do with you either. So they were saying to me, do you want him moved? And I'm saying, I have no idea. That's where Peter Meakin and David Leckie were amazing.
Yeah, the heads of Channel 7, so the CEO of the network and then the head of News and Current Affairs, they arranged for me to be transported to St. Vincent's.
Yep, to get the very best care with Dr. Richard Parkinson, who's now become a very good friend of ours because we've had to see him so many times since then.
Oh, it was so it was a shit period.
He was amazing. What about when, because fast forward a little bit, like we had to then get into the ambulance and come all the way down to St. Vincent's, and it was a long ride, and, you know, it's stressful. Grant kept going in and out of consciousness, and I was trying to talk to the man who was, you know, the senior ambulance officer, and trying to gauge from him how bad this was, because Grant looked pretty bad. And when we get to the hospital, they take him up and they cut his socks off. And the night before, he had fallen asleep, and I had coloured all his toenails black and written, I'm a dick, on his foot in permanent Dexter. And so they cut his socks off and they're like, oh, right. And so they were trying to check, you know, the feeling in his toes and the circulation. So I had to go and get nail polish remover, and I was so embarrassed to take this black nail polish off.
Do you remember how, like, obviously we did the treatment. It goes on for months. I had a hospital bed at home just to get me out of hospital.
Well, we had to get the hospital bed at home because at that point they had said the best thing to do was to not operate. And to keep your back absolutely still, like I mean still, so that the collagen around those bones would eventually hold it together.
And however, pull all the shards back in.
That's right. But if he moved too much, or if he moved the wrong way or the wrong angle, then that collagen won't be as strong. It won't form really well. So it was this insane rule that you had to keep him perfectly still for months.
I'd live life flat out too at that point, like pedal to the metal. And like it was due to be my second appearance in a V8 supercar at Mount Panorama Bathurst, which was my boyhood dream come true. And all of a sudden,
you were leading the mini championship.
I was leading that championship, yeah. And then all of a sudden the handbrake gets pulled on your life. And I didn't cope very well with everything coming to a stop. You know, I was a goal chaser. I was a ladder climber. I was winning races and gathering Guinness World Records. I was just madly consuming, madly trying to get the next big thing. And so the moment you are reduced to nothing and you are unable to move or look after yourself, was an emotionally shit house period.
And you're in a lot of pain as well.
So much pain.
And Grant's very private, so he does not like to use a bedpan to go to the toilet. He did not like anybody cleaning him at all, which when you have to lay still for weeks on end, and he did in the hospital, and he had bed sores, and I used to come in and put powder on his bed sores, and then I went down to Paddy's Markets and I found, it's probably fake, but a bit of sheepskin, you know, to lay him on, and it was awful. And then, you know, I'd get these calls at 4 a.m. in the morning because I wasn't allowed to stay the night. So I would stay there all day and then I would have to go home for an hour, 2 hours because we weren't married, remember, because it was St. Vincent's. Right. And so I'd get this call at 4 in the morning.
You were married, just not to me.
That's a low blow. I feel like we need some kind of sound effect.
It's
like
history.
I'll work on it.
Oh,
I'll work on it.
The Family Feud, ba-ba. Yeah, great.
Well, it is a family feud, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it will be by the end of this podcast.
And so now I've lost my point. What was I saying? It was
terrible. But remember, the one thing the hospital does to you, it treats the injury, but it doesn't treat you psychologically very well. And then it sends you out with the medications and goes, okay, well, then off you go. Now, our Dr. Parkinson was fantastic, amazing. That's great. And we were warned by a friend who had recently gone through a broken back. Thankfully, he was a doctor, gave us a bit of a heads up on all the things that'll start going on in your brain as you try and handle the medication. And he warned us. And holy hell. Do you remember all the mad shit that went on?
Oh, yeah.
I remember because the moment you close your eyes, you can't tell the difference between reality and your dream. And when you wake up as soon as you close your eyes, you go into your worst nightmares. So the things that you're afraid of the most are the first things that happen the moment you fall asleep and you start dreaming, right? So it's traumatic as every time you sleep. And then when you wake up, you can't tell what's real and what isn't. I remember waking up thinking that there was a home invasion and I thought that Shezzy was being attacked, being raped in the apartment.
So meanwhile, I'm sitting at the desk doing some, you know, emailing and bits and pieces and I hear him screaming out. Now, whenever he wanted to walk to the bathroom, he had to wear a back brace. It was this big plastic thing that we had built so that it would keep him so still that it wouldn't affect anything.
It's like a body cast.
But the problem was when he had high doses of morphine and endone, which is a, you know, terrible drug, he would forget. He wouldn't have the pain and he would forget and he'd just come running out, which would freak me out to no end because I'd think, that's it, he's never going to walk again.
And I'm trying to find these guys who are attacking you and raping you. So I'm like, where are they? And he's like, I know they're here. Where are they?
Swinging sticks and, you know, and looking in cupboards and saying, oh, you're hiding them. Why are you protecting them? It was so random.
Yeah. I remember one day coming down. I remember going, walking up to, she was on the computer again. I'm like, oh, thank you. She goes, oh, what? I said, oh, thanks very much. She goes, I don't understand. Said, I know you went to London today.
Yeah, and didn't tell me.
How could you do that? Like, it's just madness.
And it was so crazy. And somebody gave me good advice and they said, just go with it and apologise. Because I couldn't make a phone call without freaking him out. He'd think, he'd hear voices and
the paranoia, the medication is the worst part of the injury by far.
Yep.
Like the injury was bad. The medication was just, it was, God, it did your head in.
And we had so many drug psychosis episodes where Grant would kick me out of the house because he would say, I'm an imposter dressed up as Shezzy. And he'd be like, I don't believe you, get out of the house. And so I'd get locked out of the house. I mean, and I'd be a crying mess. I can't call my family to tell them how bad it is because I can't make any phone calls because anytime he hears, like, I just remember sitting out the front door of our apartment and just crying for hours, just not knowing where to turn.
And in my head, all that stuff was real and I just couldn't tell the difference. The combination of pain and the endones were just such a horrible combo.
It was bad.
I remember one night I we're sharing a fair bit here, but I left the house in my undies.
Oh, I was just about to say that
to
was
go the... and get some scotch.
So okay, let me paint the picture because I was, you know, with it.
We're in the CBD right of Sydney. We're on Castlereagh Street, edge of Haymarket Chinatown.
You told me, you said, I want to race Nürburgring, okay?
Germany.
Yeah. And you said, I've got an opportunity. I need to get my back right to race, okay, at Nürburgring in 12 weeks or something. And I was thinking, holy shit, you are crazy. You are absolutely crazy. However, I did see how depressed you were when, and I had to watch you know, repeats of Bathurst that year and you were crying. And
watching your own cast on the on the starting grid without you in it just destroyed me. That's everything I ever lived for. That's all I wanted, all I ever aspired to do. And it was...
And so we used that as like a carrot at the end of the stick.
Yeah.
So you didn't like doing the physio, you know, because it hurt. It was hard. Remember, I used to take you to physio appointments, and we used
motorsport was the light at the end of the tunnel. Like if I could get back in a race car, I knew that that would bookend it would be the end of a bad period, and I could close that book and finish that chapter.
So you said to me that you wanted to race at Nürburgring.
Yeah.
Okay. 24 hours.
I needed, sort of motivation to push through the shit.
Yeah. So I asked the doctor, okay? So Dr. Richard Parkinson, who I, you know, would trust with my life. He was amazing and he is amazing. And I said to him, Grant wants to race. And he said, Grant is a professional racer, okay? And if he feels that he can get back into racing, then he can do it. I asked another doctor friend, Dr. Anton, who... you know, is a very good friend of ours, and Dr. Anton Metchler. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to get him off the heavy drugs, you know, to be able to race. And we'll see how he copes with his physio off the medication. So I was given no guidance as to how to turn off, you know, this, because it's after 3 months, it's almost a bit of a dependence.
Yeah,
You can't tell what is pain and what is your dependence on the drug at that point.
Withdrawal masks pain. So because you're taking effectively drugs, when you remove the drugs, your body then will fight to get more of it, back, right? So the withdrawal mimicked pain.
Right.
So to entice you to take more tablets.
So we didn't know, okay? And at that point, Grant had no idea what medication he was taking. I was in charge of all of it. And I still, to this day, have no idea how people can self-medicate themselves
periods. I wouldn't have been trusted. I just would have thrown them down like bloody M&Ms.
And so I decided to not give him his afternoon tablet, and then I decided not to give him his nighttime tablet. And then at about 10 o'clock that evening, he came to me and he said he was in his undies and socks.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what are you doing up? And he said, I want some scotch, you fucking bitch. And I was like, pardon. Sorry.
Hey, let's just say it's withdrawals talking.
I know.
It's not me as a personality.
He was all sweaty and clammy and looked crazy, really psycho. And I said, you can't have scotch. You're not drinking, okay? We're taking off the medication. Come and hop back into bed, or otherwise I can, like, put you in a nice warm shower. And he goes, listen, you fucking bitch.
Woo.
I am going to get some scotch. Where's my ginger ale? And what I hadn't realised was that at that point he had smuggled a full bottle of some kind of alcohol and had taken it to the bedroom and was drinking it. And so about 15 minutes later he came back again. Now we had to kind of separate during this time because we'd been together for, you know, 3 months every single day, and he was crazy and I was trying to, you know, keep sane. And he came out and he's like, well, if you're not going to get it for me, then fine, fuck you. And he grabbed the keys, the only keys, and walked straight out the door of our 34-story building on Castle Ray Street in Chinatown.
Central Sydney, yeah.
And
I was really thirsty. I really wanted that scotch. And so, I didn't even think about the idea of, dude, you're in your undies and it's nighttime walking down the street, but like 7 o'clock at night, plenty of people around. Well, it just didn't occur to me. I just wasn't in a place where I could understand my own actions or behaviours.
No.
And then
you probably just knew that you felt really terrible and you didn't know how else to medicate it yourself.
Do you want to explain where you found me?
Well, it sounds pretty simple, but I spent 3 hours canvassing the streets of inner Sydney, crying, picturing that tomorrow's headlines would be Grant Denyer found dazed and confused wandering the streets in his undies and his socks. And I looked everywhere.
Not a great look.
And I was crying and I thought, do I call the police? I don't know what to do, you know. And I also thought he could be violent. Like he'd never spoken to me like that before and I was going out of my brain. I looked everywhere and then I just decided to have a look in the, you know, the fire exit. in our building, which was pretty filthy. Mm. It was pretty gross. And it broke my heart. I found him at the top of the fire stairs, like laying face down in all this filth. There was even a human poo next to him with a sock. Like,
it wasn't mine.
No, it wasn't Grant.
I'd fallen asleep in the top of the fire escape and, yeah, and next to a human poo.
And
how
if
sad
you know,
is that? In my undies on concrete stairs.
And he had his – and I just remember I had to pick him up. Now, I had eaten myself into oblivion during that period because I had nothing else to do. Chocolate and red wine. So I was pretty strong. So I picked him up and carried him down the stairs, and it was heartbreaking because he had all this dirt and gunk. And if you knew how prude Grant is when it comes to poos, like I didn't think that he would cope with that.
Withdrawal and medication is
bad.
And so many people come out of hospital every single day for injuries on these medications, and you're just not given the skills to be able to handle it. Like, the pressure it puts on relationships and families, and there's people still on that medication 5 years after the accident. Like, we crash coursed out of it because we knew it was bad stuff and we had to get off it instantly. We knew it. You can't maintain, you can't be on that stuff. It's not healthy
for
you.
And the long-term effects, after that nobody kind of tells you.
Oh, yeah, guts are stuffed as a result of all of that now, and I still have to deal with that.
It ate away at all your stomach lining. You get fatigued a lot easier than you used to, and that's all happened since the back injury.
Yeah. I'm sorry for everything I put you through that period. It was shit, wasn't it?
It was pretty tough. Yeah.
But what a way to start a relationship. Right. If you can make it through that, hell, it's going to be a pretty rock solid relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank God that was so long ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Stuff that for a joke.
But you know what? It totally connected us in a very unhealthy way at that point because Well, because later on we learnt the term codependence.
Mm.
And our whole existence during that, period, and probably for 2 years, 3 years after was patient and nurse. That's right.
Yeah.
So anywhere we'd go, I carried the bags for Grant. I didn't let him do anything that I thought might hurt his back. I answered questions on his behalf. We went everywhere together. And then I remember one day they said, Grant's got to go to the Congo and
See some gorillas for a story.
And it's too dangerous for you. I even sat in the back of a car going around Nürburgring.
At
200 kilometres an hour. I couldn't see anything. I had a helmet on. Like, that's how crazy, enmeshed we were.
But look, a young, hot, blonde-headed girl in the Congo... too dangerous. We would have lost you. We would have been stopped at gunpoint and you would have been taken for sure.
Even though I said I could wear a wig
shave my eyebrows off. It would have been too risky.
I was willing to go.
You got to remember that when we were in the Congo, we got out, the place where we got out on this wild road to walk in, trek in to see the gorillas, which is about a 2 hour trek in from there, there had been a massacre 2 weeks early where 15 people had been murdered in the back of this truck that was just ambushed.
I do remember
that.
It was
2 weeks before I got there. The shells were still on the ground. So there's no way we could have taken you there.
No, I know that, but I cried for 6 days. I felt so lost. It was like, what I imagine what parents feel like when they've raised their kids and then their kids leave and they don't need them anymore. I was so lost because looking after you, oh my gosh, looking after you had become my main role. I gave up absolutely everything. I didn't work. That was all I did. I was your nurse for, such a long time. As it turns out, that is not healthy. And we did, down the track, issues started to
codependence issue. Yeah, we had to untangle ourselves from that period because it was so intense where I needed you so much that we had to then reverse engineer that just to get you your sense of identity back again that wasn't so entangled in mine.
But that took years, and so the broken back flow on, I guess, kind of had a ripple effect for a long time. But, once you start off a relationship with that much drama – And we were quite non-dramatic. We are quite non-dramatic.
Well, I don't know if people describe you as non-dramatic.
Thank you.
That's what we love about you most is your flamboyant dramaticness. Are we going to have to do this every podcast?
Because
this is emotionally harrowing.
I know. I'm looking at George, like, pointing at my clock.
He's going, I can't believe the shit I'm hearing, man. How are you guys still together?
You're bringing tears to my eyes.
I'm getting beautiful upset too. And we've not followed any of the, you know, the notes that you... Can I just
this
say...
This is nothing that we wanted to talk about, we've spoken about.
Well, I told you it would just come out, didn't I? So Grant said, if we're going to do a podcast, you know, we have to jot down a couple of notes. And I said, I'm pretty sure it'll just flow.
Nah, it'll get pretty light from the next couple of podcasts on. ADHD, miscarriages. Oh, that'd be great. Look forward to that one. Holy hell, we've got some topics. Jesus.
I know, Well, I don't think much of that has been written about, so I guess nobody really knows. But I was trying to see, how long have we been talking for?
Look, it says here 43 minutes.
Right. How long do people normally do podcasts for?
I don't know.
Gosh, Grant, ours was an hour.
Was it?
Was it?
Sometimes I listen to them and they're 3 hours. That's too long.
Three hours?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I should have brought some snacks. A pregnant woman can't
Well, we've gone 40 minutes
hours.
And we haven't even gone past the first year yet of our relationship.
Yeah, but it...
Oh, yeah, when I first farted. There's a good... That's a Shazzy story for you guys. I'd look forward to that one in the upcoming podcast.
That was
a game changer.
Thank you. It was the
you
pizza.
You always blame the pizza, even when we haven't even had pizza for, like, weeks.
Well, because I have a habit of doing it in my sleep.
Yeah, because you know why when you first... You know,
I can't believe I'm encouraging this.
Well, let's finish on a light note. This is when two people get together, you've got your best air and graces, you want to put on the best ultimate version of you because you're too afraid if you show them the real you, they'll run a mile, right? So everyone's doing that dance, the polite dance. Like, how great's this? Oh no, I don't fart. Do you fart? No, I don't even go to the toilet. I don't poo, no.
Which is such a big sticking point for you because you're such a prude.
Yeah,
I'm
a hide. Even when I was a baby, like my mum tells this story, like I was under the dining table and she lifts up like the tablecloth and goes, what are you doing down there? And I was doing a poo in my nappy and I was like, close the door. So this has carried on my whole life.
And
right?
10 years on, he still does that. Like today, I walked into the bathroom and I said, hey, Grant, can I start? And he goes, get out. I'm going to the toilet. Yeah. Like we've been married for 10 years.
I know. I can't. It's a no-go zone for relationships.
I had to wipe your ass the whole way through the broken
back. I don't want to go back there, okay? I don't want you ever in there again.
And the last time you hurt your back.
Yeah, well, okay. So Shezzy clearly had been holding in a lot of farts in the early stage of our relationship.
Don't remember that.
And then one night.
I talk a lot. I gulp a lot of air.
One night. We're lying there and I'm awake. And I thought, what? Was that up? And then a. And I thought, she's just.
That sounds like a truck.
And then.
Thank you. Oh.
This thing literally went off for 5 fucking minutes.
I did not.
And I'm like laughing so much. I thought, you've been holding in that much air and you were dead asleep. And you
days.
Didn't even...
It's been days.
Probably. Oh, my God. And I was like, oh, this is so funny.
I remember you waking me up and saying,
yeah,
you just farted. And I was like, right. It sounds like a truck.
It was just like, there was so much cheek wobble in it. It was like...
Oh, all right. Thank you.
It was. Oh, my God. If you would have heard this thing. And I was like, good. I'm glad we can get to this milestone now and get this out of the way. So you can just feel free to be you, mate. You don't have to have to hold that stuff in.
What about you
now? We're beyond that.
You do a fart and you try and put the covers over my head.
Well.
And you call it your love juices. And it smells like twisties, and I can't cope with that right now.
Well, at least twisties is a pretty good smell.
It does not smell like twisties.
That's a good get by you.
That's your take on it.
Oh, I still.
I said to you the other day.
When is Dutch ovening not funny?
That's not funny. I said to you, I've just washed my hair. Don't put the covers over my head. Now my head smells like fart. And even the next day at school, I could see people looking at me strangely. All I could smell was fart.
Oh, farty pants over there. Farty McFarty.
So wrong.
Yeah, it was funny.
But yeah, farts are funny. But
well, have we set the tone of where this could possibly go?
Far
because
out. It could go anywhere.
We haven't even scratched the surface. We haven't even got into the stuff that, you know, we haven't really about stuff that annoys you and stuff that annoys me. And I think,
well, actually, I wanted
this
to
is a healthy place to do it.
I wanted to have
George, is there an unofficial counselor?
I wanted to have a segment, which you said was, I don't know what, well, I can't repeat the term, but I thought it'd be really cool to have a surprise segment. Right. And you were like, no, just talk about it. Because I thought it would be really cool to talk about something like our first kiss.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or your graduation story. And then when I said that to you, you actually had a really cool graduation story. So you better tell it now. Because my graduation was very uneventful.
You want me to tell it?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Or should we leave it there?
No.
Oh, yeah, hook them.
Yeah. We'll do the graduation story at the next one.
I think you'd tell it.
Nah. Leave them wanting more.
Oh, my gosh.
All don't give them too much.
A little bit of bait.
And this has been fun.
Tiny bit.
Like, I know that we don't actually genuinely get the chance to level properly, like on a proper emotional level, you and I. We're just busy in life. I'm away a lot. I had 300 nights in hotels in the last 2.5 years working.
So I remember.
I've been away a lot.
The only time you worked this year was during the school holidays when I was throwing up 24/7 and had the kids. Yeah.
And then Family Feud came along, and then right in the middle when you needed me, I was gone. Which has been, unfortunately, something that's happened a lot in our life. But we, you know, like everybody in this world, we're just working hard to make ends meet and try and get ahead and pay bills and cover mortgages and raise two children and now a third.
On a farm. Yeah.
In a global financial crisis, and there's the likelihood of not much TV work in the future.
Yeah. Oh, something's beeping. I think that's telling us it's time to wind up.
Yeah. It's George's really lame sound effect.
Yeah. It is, yeah. I tried.
Well, thank you. And
should we do more of this? Are you okay if it gets super uncomfortable and personal?
I think you've just thrown me in the deep end, like straight up. I'm so glad that we're not filming this whole thing because my facial expressions were like, my eyes were like dinner plates.
Thanks for listening to Grant and Shezzy. It's all true.
Yeah, thanks.
Plenty more juicy shit to come. Sit back and relax, Australia. Get ready for this. Just when you thought you didn't want any more, here it comes.
How am I supposed to? Yeah.
Wow, you should do some voiceover work.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Great to have you on board. We really appreciate it. I don't know. What do you say to people at the end of a podcast?
Well, I've got a little tagline for mine. I go, stay safe, be kind, and have a convo, because my podcast is called The Convo.
Oh, yes.
So maybe think of be true.
Be true. Be true. Be true, everybody.
Love you.
Be true.
It's All True, the podcast with Grant and Shezzy Denyer.
Bye-bye.